Hour number two of the Rob Brown Radio Show goes now. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Great to have you, Rob, the great one, Lonzo, with you on a Thursday morning, a Masters crossed fingers Thursday morning, as we wait to see what time the Masters, they will tee off today. They will tee off today. We just don't know when. The biggest question that I have for the Masters today is you know what? This is going to be an item on the water cooler cheat sheet, so we should probably just dive right into that. Ladies and gentlemen, it is after 7 o'clock in the morning. It is almost time for you to get your happy butt into the office to punch in, to respond to those passive-aggressive emails you got overnight asking you why aren't you up at 1 in the morning working. It is time for you to deal with Sandy, who did not participate in the group project and is now asking why she's not getting credit for it.
Stinking Sandy.
She's so obnoxious, dude. I can't stand her.
And we know that's not your real hair color.
Yeah. Sandy. It is almost time for work, which is bad news. But the good news is that means it's almost time for your first break. You're going to walk down. You're going to fill up that coffee cup with the liquid of your choice, preferably one that won't get you fired. But hey, live your best life. I support you. You're going to walk down by your coworkers. You're going to stand around. And if you're listening to this show, it means more than likely you're going to talk sports. And if you want to talk sports, you got to know what's going on in the world of sports. And if you've got to know what is going on in the world of sports, we got you covered with this. And it's the water cooler cheat sheet. The top three sports stories that you need to know for today, April 11th, 2024. Let us begin, my friends, with item number one. Item number one is where I was going just mere minutes ago. And then I thought, oh, well, this is item number one. I should probably just start the water cooler cheat sheet. And well, here we are. The start to the Masters at Augusta National Golf Course is currently delayed. How long? That's a wonderful question. We don't know yet. What we do know is that at 5 a.m., there was an update from the Masters. The tournament update was that the public parking and gates would not open before 9 a.m., and that the first players off the tee would not strike a golf ball until after 9 a.m. How late? We don't know yet. The tournament is going to try to at least get most of the first round off the tee and underway. As I mentioned earlier, that is in large part because of the desire to make sure that the championship round still takes place on Thursday. There's good news and there's bad news. The good news is that if you look at the weather.com satellite imagery up till now, and then the predicted storm path after now, it does appear like most of the rain is scheduled to clear out of the area around 10 o'clock in the morning. Obviously, you've got to factor in some time for the tournament course management to get out there and fix up anything that needs to be fixed up, to remove any standing water that is in high traffic areas of shots, and to help get the greens dried up. Now, the Masters does have subterranean green drying systems underneath their greens, so that won't be as big of a deal as it might be in other courses. However, it is still a process that they will have to go through. The bad news is that despite the fact that predicted rainfall in the area should let up around 10 to 11 a.m. this morning, CNN Weather is projecting that showers and storms are forecast up to as late as 2 o'clock this afternoon. Now, If it gets to be 2 in the afternoon and they can't play yet, that's when I think you could see the first round postponed until tomorrow, which of course would mean that we will have a Masters Championship Monday, not Sunday. If they can get enough guys out on the course today, even if a chunk of them do not finish, if they can create a world in which maybe 30% of the field has to go off at butt crack of dawn tomorrow morning to get the end of their first round in, to then head back to the clubhouse, have a turn dog and a brewski, as professional athletes like myself do, and then roll back out in the afternoon to shoot their second 18, then that is what they'll do. Because again, getting these guys out on Monday is still the on Sunday is still the preferred course of action. So we'll see how this plays out. Like I mentioned, the update from 5 a.m. was that the first round will not begin before 9 a.m. I suspect that is, by the way, 1 hour after it was originally scheduled to start. I have wagered, based on what I've looked at so far this morning, the most likely result is that we will probably see first golfers going off around noon. That's my guess. That is not official. That is speculation from me. That is based on the predicted forecast, based on what the satellite looks like right now, adding in an hour to 2 hours to get the course ready for play. Because there is one thing the Masters cares about more than anything else, and that is the mystique, the magic that is translated through the television broadcast. And they are not going to want to show that course with standing water around it. They don't want to have that look out there in public. So we'll see what happens. We'll see where it goes. But as of right now, no earlier than 9 a.m., my guess is going to be probably closer to noon. We'll keep you updated as we get those updates moving forward. Let's get to item number two. As Ted Lasso once said, as May in the show Ted Lasso once said, it's the hope that kills you. And sports are a wonderful place for hope. Sports are a place that provides you with tons of hope. Sports are a place where hope runs wild, brother. I find myself in a tough spot because on one hand, the Charlotte Hornets aren't good. The problem is I suddenly have hope. The Hornets last night knocked off Trae Young and the Atlanta Hawks 115-114. That included outscoring the Hawks by 16 in the fourth quarter, 38-22. That led them to a one-point victory. The hope for me comes in the name Brandon Miller. The hope for me comes in the name of a former Alabama Crimson Tiger. 27 points on 9 of 17 from the floor, 5 of 11 deep, and going a perfect 4 for 4 from the stripe. He also had 3 boards, a couple of assists, and just 1 turnover on the evening. Brandon Miller can ball. Brandon Miller can play. And there's really no spot on the floor, with the exception of directly underneath the rim, that Brandon Miller can't score from. I loved watching this kid play last night. I have enjoyed watching Brandon Miller play the last couple of games because without LaMelo Ball, Brandon Miller has started to get much more comfortable in his role as a shooting forward. He has started to get much more comfortable handling the basketball. He has started to get much more comfortable working the ball into and out of different positions on the floor. I have told you already, I got a lot of hope for the future of this franchise. it comes in the form of having a very young core, a core that I have watched the last couple of games post LaMelo Ball really start to gel around each other. Miles Bridges, Brandon Miller is in that mix. Grant Williams, acquired from Boston, is only 25 years old. He is in that mix. You add LaMelo back, you let Brandon Miller keep balling out. You let Grant, a Charlotte guy, continue to be a guy. And then you add in the fact that this team has got a war chest of first-round picks over the next couple of years, acquired via trades around the league, and all of a sudden, I have hope that there might be good basketball in Charlotte. This team, I think, has done a real good job. Got to get the head coaching search right. Got to find somebody who clicks with the youngins, with the utes. But I like the direction that they are pointed in right now. And Brandon Miller put that on full display last night with a win over a returning Trae Young. Trae had his double-double in that game. The question is, can you overcome that? And the answer last night for Charlotte was, you're damn right you can. I love it. Let's get to item number three. I don't know if this plays or not here. I don't know if this matters around here or not, but it is an interesting and intriguing story to me. Yesterday, John Calipari was officially introduced as the new head coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks. Of course, he leaves Kentucky behind. He takes a decreased salary to be the HC and replace Eric Musselman in Arkansas. Calipari said, and I quote, "Kentucky is the bluest of blue. There's only a few schools like that, and I hate to tell you, Arkansas is one of them." Yes, we all know the historic contributions to college basketball of the Arkansas Razorbacks. Calipari makes a move over to get out of Kentucky. Does this story matter to y'all? And the reason I ask this question is not so much about Kentucky or John Cal or Arkansas or Eric Musselman and USC, where he is coaching now. The reason I ask is because this is a big story in basketball markets. It's a big story in markets where basketball is considered one of the primary sports. And I'm wondering, after the success of Brad Brownell and the Clemson Tiger basketball team this year, after the success of Lamont Paris and the South Carolina Gamecock basketball program this year, after the success of Bob Ritchie and the Furman Paladin basketball program over the past couple of years, is this becoming a basketball market? As a host, I'm intrigued. As a host and a basketball lover, I like to think so. I like to think that a lot has happened over the past couple of years that would be pushing this market towards being more basketball invested. And I think every school in our map, combined with, as I mentioned a minute ago, my maybe not undeserved hope in the future of the Charlotte Hornets basketball program. My genuine hope is that when you combine all of those successes, that this is a basketball market. Clemson just made a run to the Elite Eight under Brad Brownell in a year in which I was told Brad's going to choke and get fired. He ultimately lost to Alabama, a Final Four team. He ultimately lost to a team that I genuinely believe was the second best team in probably the second or third best basketball conference in America. It was a good game. It wasn't like they got racked in that game. That wasn't a choke. That was just a loss to a good team. South Carolina. Yeah, you got bounced in the first round by Oregon, which I told you, don't be surprised if it happens. It's a good Pac-12 team. In the swan song of that conference, they had a little extra motivation to try to carry the Pac-12 flag further into that tournament. It's a good Oregon team. You got bumped in the first round, but you got bumped. I don't know if you heard this before. South Carolina was projected to finish last in the conference. They did not. They finished T2 in the conference. Recruiting looks like it's going very well for this basketball program. I'm intrigued to see what the portal looks like for this basketball program. A lot of success for all of the schools and the franchises within our market. Will that do anything to push basketball forward? Will that do anything to make basketball more popular in the area? Will that do anything to create a world where next year, when the season tips off, Rob Brown is going to get more texts and phone calls and emails and tweets from people going, hey, can we get some basketball updates? Can we get some basketball news and information? I hope it does. I hope it does, because I've told y'all, I think you lean into this. By the way, I didn't even mention Dawn Staley winning a damn national championship a few days ago. I hope that with all those things combined.
Probably should have led with that.
I probably should have led with that. I hope with all those things combined that it does help force this area to move closer to basketball. But I am asking y'all now, does the success of Clemson hoops, of South Carolina hoops, men's and women's, of the Charlotte Hornets, of the Atlanta Hawks, who will be a play-in team, does the success of Furman Paladins under Bob Ritchie, does the success of every school and franchise within our little coverage map, does it turn you on to basketball more? Because let's call a spade a spade. I understand we're in a football market. Daddy ain't dumb. Mama didn't raise no fool. I understand that we are in a football market, for sure. I would never say anything to the controversy. To the contrary, which would cause controversy. I would never say anything to the contrary. But my question is, if we're being legit, the Panthers are bad. I think they'll be better, but they're bad. The Clemson Tigers have disappointed their fans 2 years in a row. South Carolina failed to make a bowl game. With the exception of Furman, every other team in the area has not been good lately. So I'm wondering if that will lead to a transition to not a market in which basketball takes over football, because that's just never going to happen, but a market in which next year you guys are more apt for more basketball coverage. I'm very curious.
Nah, did you see Cole was at the spring game for Clemson and how many people were there? People are ready for college football and for the NFL to be back.
Oh, for sure. Again, I am not asking if this is going to create a world where basketball overtakes football. Obviously, it's not. Again, I'm not an idiot. What I'm asking is, does this create a world in which basketball elevates itself in the echelon of topics that we cover on this station? Of topics that are covered by the TV market, by the TV stations in the market. Is this something that next year, because I agree, I do not think for a second college basketball, certainly not the NBA, is going to overcome college football. But does it show up more next year? Because there's a lot of great basketball in the area. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back here in just a minute. Rashad Beard scheduled to join us at 8:40 this morning. Still on the lookout for him. We'll let you know if we get him locked in. 9:20, it's Fight Club. 8:20, we're going to go clock in and lock in. Haven't done that for a while. Ordinarily, that's a Friday segment, but we're going to do it on a Thursday. I'll give you my best and most favoritist bets for Masters weekend. That's all coming up on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. Rob, Lonzo, and you. Let's talk a little bit more about the Masters. It is the big event of the weekend. If you're not a golf fan, if you're not a Masters fan, well, you're just going to have to hang out and let the dorks play for a little while, okay? It's no different than anything else. You'll get your time in the sun. Just chill for a few minutes. You'll be okay. It is, without a doubt, the biggest golf event of the year on the calendar. So, yesterday spent a lot of time talking Masters alongside Nick Costos on You Better You Bet, my guy PJ Glasser. I'm going to be on this evening with BetMGM tonight. We'll be talking about the Masters again. We've talked about the Masters here on this show, and we'll continue to the rest of the day and tomorrow and probably Monday, because the pace we're on now, we may actually have the Masters being played on Monday, but if nothing else, we'll have a champion on Sunday to talk about. There's a couple of things that I want to get to. The first is Scottie Scheffler. Now, I understand that many of you don't care about the gambling side of all this, and that's fine. As I have told you before, even if you are not into gambling on sports, and that's totally fine and legitimate, I still think as a fan who doesn't gamble, it's important, it's interesting to keep an eye on the lines, on the numbers, on the Vegas odds. And I think it is important to do so because it can tell you a lot about what is expected to happen on the golf course. Here's one thing that I found very interesting. Scottie Scheffler, who is right now striking the ball as well as anybody we've seen since Tiger in his prime. I've heard that a number of times, and I got real upset with it. But I came to the realization that the reason I got upset with it was the same reason that old heads got upset when people were comparing Michael Jordan to Oscar Robertson. It is the same reason people got upset when people started comparing Kobe Bryant to Michael Jordan. The same reason that people got upset when folks started comparing LeBron to Kobe. It is because, and I stand firm in this belief, it is because whatever is best when you are in your puppy love phase of whatever it is, the thing that we're talking about, you're always going to think that was the best it ever was. Music is the go-to example. It just is. If you are from the 70s, you think that 70s psychedelic rock was the best rock. If you are from the 80s, you think glam rock, metal rock, hair rock was the best rock. If you're from the 90s, you think grunge and alternative was the best rock. If you are from the 2000s, you thought that alt rock, mood rock, emo rock is the best rock. If you're from the 2010s, you don't know what rock and roll is because nobody plays it anymore. Do you see my point? I think the gut reaction I had to the conversation about Scottie Scheffler was because I fell into that trap. When I was a kid, when I was coming into my love for golf, I say when I was a kid, it was 24 years ago, I was in my early teens, but it was when I was coming into my love for golf. Tiger Woods was the guy. He was the best in the world. He was better than you, and you knew it. Now, the discussion was even raging back then because Tiger was coming to his own. Tiger was dominating everybody. Tiger was entering tournaments with a full field as a betting favorite to the tune of minus or even money. And of course, what did we hear? He'll never be Jack. He'll never be Arnie. He'll never be so-and-so. That's what we heard.
He still isn't Jack.
I mean, again,
if you're talking about winning majors, right?
If that's the metric you use, correct. He's not Jack.
Okay.
But, again, sports is nuanced. Conversations are nuanced. This is why Lonzo and I have had plenty of fights about the fact that rings do not a legacy make alone. because there's a million variables. This is the conversation that went on about Hank and the Babe for so many years. Yeah, it's real easy to be the best in the game when half of the world isn't allowed to play it. I make the argument Tiger eventually became a victim of his own success because all of a sudden golf became cool. And Tiger wasn't out there competing anymore just against older golfers. He was out there competing with an entire new generation of golfers that he inspired to become golfers.
See, I'm not the biggest golf fan, but I disagree with you there. Tiger's worst enemy was himself. It had nothing, because golf, you're not really competing with other people. You're competing with yourself. He could not handle his own demons, and that brought about all the problems that he's had. I don't think it has anything to do with any competition, because he didn't have any when he was on top of his game. But he let personal problems and other things get in the way, and that caused his downfall.
Again, part of the conversation. That's why I say conversations in sports are way more nuanced than a lot of people give it credit for. You are 100% correct. A lot of what happened with Tiger was on Tiger. But at the same time...
Because, just one more thing, because if it's about the competition, well, the next Tiger should have already happened, and it hasn't. And that's been a problem for PGA as far as they groom people. This is the next Tiger. This is the next Tiger. And it's not. There's no one who stood out the way he did just because of his game and how good he was. No one can do that on a consistent basis.
I agree. Again, part of why when people said Scottie Scheffler is playing golf as well as Tiger in his prime, my reaction was, get out of here. Knock it off with that. Not a chance. Because of how head over shoulders he was better than everybody else. Then I went back and I have been looking at Scottie Scheffler. Scottie Scheffler's strokes gain numbers are absolutely better than everybody else's. And I'm talking about at every aspect of the golf course. Off the tee, he is striking the ball greens in regulation as well or better than everybody else on tour. Mid to long range shots, his strokes gain number is as good as anybody else. On the putting green, which is where tournaments like the Masters, frankly, are won and lost, his strokes gain number is as good as anybody else in golf. It is kind of ridiculous for a guy to enter a tournament like the Masters. It is kind of ridiculous to jump into a tournament that is as prestigious as the Masters. It is kind of ridiculous to enter a field that has any given year around 90 of the world's best players of a sport and to be a 3-1 favorite, to be a plus 300 favorite. Now, again, I understand that it's golf. I understand it is a sport, as Lonzo pointed out correctly and appropriately, it is a sport that is, frankly, as much about competing with yourself, being better than yourself, beating yourself, than it is about beating the other 89 guys that are going to be out there this weekend. That is absolutely correct. But man, to have people believe in you the way that, because it's not just that he's a 3-1 favorite going into this tournament. It's that he's a 3-1 favorite and he's getting about a quarter of the handle on him. That means that roughly one out of every four bets for winners of a tournament that has 90-ish dudes playing in it, one out of every four bets is on this cat. That is a silly number. It's a number that, frankly, almost doesn't make sense. one out of every four bets on a guy in a field that has 90 people in it. Let me put it this way. The Boston Celtics locked up the entire Eastern Division about 2 weeks ago. The Boston Celtics lost a total of three games at home this year. The Boston Celtics, in locking up the Eastern Division about 3 weeks ago, ensured that every game is going to be played, well, every series is going to have home court advantage in Boston, Massachusetts. And yet, Boston does not have 25% of the Eastern Conference Division champions bet coming in on them, and they have been playing the best basketball of any team in the association for months now.
All right, you're talking about odds and betting. I am curious, which sport for Rob Brown is the easiest to bet on? Where does golf rank in there?
Golf and NASCAR are two sports that I acknowledge it's tough to bet on, and it's a quantity game more than it is a quality pick game. It is very tough to pick winners in golf, because you can sit here and I can look at shots gained in different parts of the field and how those things play out at Augusta. I think you've got to have a very, very good shots gained on the green number. Your driving accuracy number has to be ridiculously high. And I can talk about all those things, but at the end of the day, how in the hell do you project a meltdown? How in the hell do you project a guy going out there and falling apart because the pressure's too much? I'll give you the example. Rory McIlroy. Rory McIlroy is a guy that every year finds himself in contention at Augusta, and every year on Sunday, for whatever reason, finds a way on 4 or 12 to stick one in the water or stick one in the woods and never recover. And all of a sudden, a guy who went like -2, -4, -6 turns around and goes +4 on the last day. Is there a way to project that? When he's sitting at, I don't know his number off the top of my head, I want to say it's like 16-1, and make a play on Rory McIlroy? I mean, the easiest thing is to say, no, you stay away from that guy. You stay away from that guy because that guy has always got bad juju on Sunday. I'll tell you what I have done. I have placed a couple of bets on Rory to turn in under par rounds, two or more under par on Thursday, Friday. Why? Because he plays great out the plays hot out the gate. Golf's a tough one. NASCAR's a tough one. Because again, I can go out there and do all the research in the world and look up all the history and the stats and the number and pit crew speed and speed on straightaways versus whatever. But at the end of the day, what I can't predict is that Corey LaJoie is going to have Ricky Stenhouse put him into the wall in three and end his day.
Are you allowed to bet if you're a golfer? I know it's regulated everywhere else.
No. Okay. There are no professional sports that I'm aware of that do not have anti-gambling rules about their players.
Because it seems like it would be one of the easier games to fix if you bet on yourself.
100%. You would be banned for life. You certainly would from Augusta, but yes, you would get banned for life. Speaking of, we got to talk about Adam Silver because he was talking about the Jontay Porter gambling scandal that's taking place right now with the Raptors. And he said yesterday that barring that man from life from the NBA is on the table. So we'll get to that later on in the show. So all of that being said, I got offended that they were trying to say Scottie Scheffler was playing Tiger Woods in his prime style golf. All of the numbers say that he is. Can he maintain that? Can he bring that to this course? Will this dude stay as hot as he has been? He is firmly atop the world golf rankings right now. He had, until it ended the other day when he went par, 28 consecutive rounds under par before he finally shot a par. Tee to green, he might be the best on the tour. And his putting strokes gained has skyrocketed over the past 6 months or so. At the Masters, Your winner always ranks amongst the leaders in greens and regulation. Do you want to take a stab at who the leader in GIR is on tour right now? That's right, Scottie Scheffler. Then you take the LIV Tour guys. The LIV Tour guys, they don't play 72-hole tournaments anymore. How will that impact them if they're in contention and now all of a sudden they got to go play one more round than they are used to playing on any given weekend? They are used to playing a much more relaxed golf tournament than the Masters. Will the energy, the adrenaline, the pressure of playing at Augusta National take a couple of those guys out of the mix? Here's what I'm driving at as well. There's a lot of interesting questions and storylines surrounding this event that go a lot deeper than who's going to win, can Tiger make the cut? We will talk about Tiger later in the show. But there's a lot more than who's going to win and will they make the cut. There's LIV Tour drama. There's television drama. There's obviously the height of the weather now taking place at Augusta National. This tournament on paper should be incredible. Does it turn out that way? Does it turn out that way? We'll talk more Masters later on in the radio broadcast, but we do have some other stuff that we need to get to on the show today. I've seen a lot of questions that have come out in the text line and on the stream, which you can join us at facebook.com/thefanupstate, twitter.com/thefanupstate, by searching and subscribing to The Rob Brown Show on Twitch and YouTube. Let's run to a break. We'll come back. We will wrap up the first hour of the radio program next. Nope, second hour of the radio program. Numbers are hard. Shut up. I'm tired and excited about the Masters. The Rob Brown Show rolls on after this. It's The Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show continues. It's The Fan Upstate. Rob and Lonzo. I want to get more into this later on in the show, but I did want to hit it here as well. ESPN put out a article, blog post, I don't know, whatever. Put up a post on their website. It said, now that Nick Saban is gone, and Nick Saban, obviously the greatest coach in the history of college football so far, now that he is gone, now that Jim Harbaugh is out, they listed who they believe to be the next 30 coaches that will shape the college football landscape moving forward. And I'm intrigued by some of the names on this list and where they fall and how ESPN organized them. And I kind of want your thoughts. They say that right now, the coach with the opportunity to have the greatest impact career-long on college football, Lonzo, it's the one I don't have an issue with, Kirby Smart at Georgia.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Ryan Day.
Ryan Day is on the list for sure. He most certainly is not number one, mainly because of the outlandish number of Ohio State fans who have said if he loses to Michigan again, they want him fired, despite the fact that he is going to have you in the playoffs 100% of seasons moving forward.
No Harbaugh excuse this year, though.
Kirby Smart at number one. Of course, he spent 11 seasons under Nick Saban learning from the Jedi Master, so no shock there.
Wait a minute, how'd Georgia do last year?
Georgia was a Nick Saban away from being in the playoffs once again.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Speaking of Alabama, at number two on this list, they have Kalen DeBoer.
What's he done?
A three-time NAIA national champion by the age of 35, left his alma mater in Sioux Falls in 2010, became an offensive coordinator at Southern Illinois, then Eastern Michigan, Fresno State, Alabama, and as the head coach at Fresno State, had a 10-win season in year two. Then he went to Washington, 25-3, reached the national title game in his second season in Seattle, immediately got the gig in Alabama after that. That's what he's done.
What's the NAIA? What level is that?
NAIA is, I don't know. Let's look.
I'm pretty sure it's Division II.
I should probably know about this. The National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics.
How many people out there know that? I mean, Diesel knows, but he's like hyper into college. So I get
hyper
that.
Into college. Yeah.
I mean, his beard quivers when you talk about it.
His beard quivers. Kalen DeBoer, I think this is more about the fact that he is at Alabama, more about the fact that he is in Nick Saban's old office, and maybe most importantly of all, he can just call Nick at any point. If he's got any questions, concerns, considerations, he can ring up old Nicholas Lou Saban in one of his many, many mansions that he owns while he's mad that kids are getting money and ask questions. By the way, Kalen DeBoer, not even 50 years old yet, which in coaching terms, relatively young. I think he's fine being on that list. I don't know about him being at number two. They've got Steve Sarkisian at Texas at number three. I know Steve Sark took this Texas Longhorn football team to the playoffs last year. I get it. Does anybody here believe Steve Sarkisian is a great coach? But does anybody here trust Steve Sarkisian long term? I don't. I think Steve Sarkisian is going to get his ass kicked in the SEC.
He's a name. When you hear his name, you go, oh, yeah, I've heard of him before.
He obviously had his struggles with addiction while he was at USC. From what I understand, he is doing dramatically better. I'm very glad to hear about that. I hate to hear somebody struggling, regardless of how I feel about him as a coach. I'm just saying that conference was bad last year. I'm not all that impressed. They did beat Alabama, and that was a big deal. But is Steve Sarkisian really a massively influential coach? Is he going to be influential when Texas is in the Southeastern Conference? I don't know, man. They have your guy, Ryan Day, at number four, Lonzo. They do say this, quote, losing three straight times to Michigan will age a man, but Day is only 45 and his career skyrocketed over the past decade. In a short time, he went from Steve Adazio's offensive coordinator at Boston College to, after 2 years as an NFL quarterbacks coach, Urban Meyer's offensive co-coordinator and eventual successor at Ohio State. Even with the aforementioned Michigan losses, he is 56-8 after 5 years with three CFB appearances and five top 10 finishes. He enters 2024 with maybe the best defense in the sport. He had the best offense per SP Plus in 2021 and has a massive opportunity to again surpass the dreaded Wolverines.
How many of those eight losses were to Michigan?
Three or four?
I would say the majority of them?
No, it's not the majority. It's either one less than half or half.
If you have multiple, but then the rest are to different teams, it would be the majority.
No. If you have eight losses, if you have five, that's the majority.
If you have eight losses, three of them...
You have more losses to Michigan than anybody else, but that is not the majority of your losses.
The majority of your losses would be to Michigan.
No.
Yes, it would.
The most losses are to Michigan, but not the majority of them are to Michigan. If you have eight, five is a majority. That's numbers.
Not if you're going by team, which is what I said. The majority, it's Michigan. You're not going to convince me. And you're thinking I'm dumb, but that's fine. You think that all the time. And I'm right. It's okay for me to be right. It's all right.
Right. When you're right, you're right. And I acknowledge you're right. But the majority of
the losses
are not.
Thank you for acknowledging that I'm right.
The majority of your losses aren't to Michigan. The most losses are to Michigan, but not the majority of them. You don't. Okay. Doesn't matter. Either way, Ryan Day is number four. You good with that position on the list? I think I am. I'm not.
You know, I'm writing down that you acknowledged I was right so I can point.
No, I didn't say that. I said, when you are right, you are right. Oh my God, what are we doing here? When you are right, but you are not right right now.
Well, now you're going to say I'm right all the time.
If the majority of your losses were to Michigan, that means you have five out of eight losses to Michigan.
No.
If you had four losses to Michigan, that would mean exactly half of your losses are to Michigan.
I don't know why you have getting so bent over this.
Because words matter.
Yeah, I know. And you said yours wrong. It's okay. You'll get there someday, kid.
Watch
the color in his cheeks rise.
If I have 8 M&Ms. One's red, one's green, one's blue, one's yellow, one's brown, and 3 are pink. I know there's no pink M&Ms.
Not and the majority of the M&Ms are pink.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are.
The majority of M&Ms are everything but pink. Okay. All right. Anyway, this is pointless. The point here is Ryan Day should be higher than Kalen DeBoer, but Kalen DeBoer is a Saban guy.
He should be. Ryan Day should probably be 2. I mean, all the Michigan stuff aside, all the dude has done is win. I mean, he hasn't won a national championship yet, but I mean, he's won everything else.
Which is very hard to do, by the way. I've done the research.
It used to be harder. It should be easier now.
So,
because you can have a loss and still make it into the playoffs.
You can. And it's about to get a little easier, but also not at the same time. A little easier to get into the playoffs, a little harder to get
through. What I'm saying is a bad day in college football and you're done. I mean, for the entire season, the good chance, depending on who that loss was to in on your bad day. Now I think you can have one bad day and you'll be all right.
You know, we've talked about this in the past. I do wonder how much the system is going to favor the mega powers. Is going to favor the SEC and the Big Ten.
I want to OEA now, but I can't because I'll just get really sick.
They've got Lane Kiffin as the fifth most influential college football head coach right now, and Luke Fickell at number 6. Explain to me how Fickell is 6, but Dan Lanning and Mike Norvell are 7 and 8.
Come on. Take Fickell off this list.
Yeah, I don't get that one at all. I don't get that one at all. Luke Fickell at Wisconsin. Are we really putting him into the list with Link?
Obviously, I hold grudges. Luke Fickell is the last one to have a losing season at Ohio State for his one season as coach.
I don't understand Luke Fickell being on this list.
Because of what he did with Cincinnati?
It's got to be it, right? That's got to be it.
And that was a long time ago.
Yeah. And by the way, not a great first showing at Wisconsin either. Luke Fickell's on the list? All right, as far as young coaches, they've got Dan Lanning, Mike Norvell, Marcus Freeman, Elijah Drinkwitz, Lincoln Riley, Sherrone Moore, Rhett Lashley. They put Deion on the list. I actually don't have an issue with that if Deion's going to stick around. But I'm going down through this list of 30, and I'm very intrigued because did you notice what name I did not mention inside of their, quote, successful head coaches with plenty of tread left on the tires list? Luke Fickell made it. Lane Kiffin made it. Ryan Day, Steve Sarkisian, Kalen DeBoer, Kirby Smart. Not a Dabo to be found on that list. I find that very interesting.
Wow, I didn't even think about that. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about that at all.
So we're going to circle back around to this. By the way, a little bit of bad news just heard from Rashad. He is under the weather, so he will not join us today. Going to try to make it tomorrow. Said he is also getting his butt whooped right now as well. We all are.
Yeah, we all definitely are. Know about that.
So we'll try to get Rashad back in here tomorrow. So we'll talk Panthers either way coming up in less than an hour from right now. But right now, Lonzo is about to spend the majority of the next 60 seconds, which is more than half of it, talking sports in the Sports Flash.
At least he didn't say, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And he used that voice. The large band of weather across Georgia and South Carolina impacted the Braves, the Atlanta Braves, that is, as last night's game against the NL East rival New York Mets was postponed due to heavy rain. The game is scheduled to be made up on September 26th. The Braves are scheduled for a day game today against the Mets at 12:20. The Charlotte Hornets will end the year with at least 20 wins after a 115-114 victory over the Atlanta Hawks yesterday. Rookie Brandon Miller finished with 27 points, Miles Bridges with 18, and Grant Williams and Trey Mann added 16, while the Hornets went 21-22 from the free throw line. Hey, it was bound to happen eventually. Tune in this afternoon from 3 to 7 p.m. for a brand new local show, Wire to Wire. Cole Bryson and Diesel get you up to date on the latest local and national sports news, and it's all Wire to Wire.